From Daylight, I'm Kazuki Akiba.
I'm Brandon Beiser.
And this is Sayonara Baseball. This is a podcast where you and I find unseen baseball gems by analyzing them alongside different trends, news, and motivation behind many moves around the league today.
On today's show, we'll talk about how we watch a baseball game, the AL East and what's new, a little bit about the Milwaukee Brewers, and more than just the bullpen. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Sayonara Baseball. Today is Thursday, August 19th, 2021. We are broadcasting this again during a live Mariners broadcast and during the first day of the Little League World Series. And before we begin, we'll start with the friends of the pod business. Skylar Brandt, who we have now shown her original episode and rebroadcast her episode recently, has shared with us that after a successful summer, the American Ballet Theater is back at Lincoln Center this fall, and she will be reprising her role in Giselle, the role that she discussed with us in her episode. That begins in October of 2021. So congratulations to Skylar and our other friend, Devin Tuescher, and the rest of American Ballet Theater, and best of luck this fall. Also, tomorrow, August 20th, through the rest of the month, August 31st, marks the final time, we can hopefully say this, the IIHF Women's Ice Hockey World Championships, which was delayed not once but twice due to the COVID-19 pandemic, is taking place in Calgary, Alberta, after being rescheduled from Halifax to Halifax again, now is in Calgary. It starts tomorrow. Games are broadcast in the U.S. on NHL Network for Team Canada and Team USA. All other broadcasts on the U.S. are on ESPN+. If you live in Canada, games are on TSN. We have several connections to both these teams. Me personally, I know several players on Team Canada, so I'm heavily conflicted. But if you were able to watch the games, please do, especially the gold medal games. They are phenomenal and one of the best sporting events you will watch ever. Now, to the news. First, we'll start off with the youth. The Little League Softball World Series ended this week with the Greene County Little League from Oklahoma taking the title. The Little League World Series, as we said, Little League Baseball World Series, has started today, Thursday, in Williamsport. It will run through August 29th. Games on the family of networks for ESPN and ABC. As a New Yorker, I get to say that Toms River, New Jersey, the home club of Todd Frazier, is back in the tournament this year. So if you are interested in seeing his, I believe, nephew is playing, you can watch that. And now we'll get into the Major League Baseball news. Saturday, August 14th, Tyler Gilbert, Arizona Diamondbacks, pitched this season's eighth no-hitter, becoming the fourth pitcher in Major League Baseball history to get a no-hitter. In his first Major League start, he was a Rule 5 minor league camp pick of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Madison Bumgarner pitched a seventh inning no-hitter as part of a doubleheader for Arizona when they played Atlanta earlier this year. That didn't count as a no-hitter, which I thought was kind of a bummer in that sense. But it's the team's second no-hitter recorded for the season. It is the fourth time, like we said, that a player has done his first start. The last time that happened was Kazuki, you're going to capture hopefully correct because his name, Bobo Holloman. In 1953, I remember hearing that name and I thought it was Hollerman every time, but it's Bobo Holloman in 1953. The other two happened before 1900. This is the Arizona Backs' third no-hitter in team history. Randy Johnson pitched a perfect game in 2004. Edwin Jackson, who seems to have never left Major League Baseball ever. I mean, he just pitched for Team USA in the Olympics in 2021 for Team USA with the two other players. For Gilbert, the stats are pretty cool. 102 pitches, so very efficient. Only 5 strikeouts and 3 walks. Pretty simple game overall. And he did it against the Padres, which I think is even more striking. A team that, like we said in our previous episode, if they do not perform well, they are easy outs. That's the easiest way to get out, is if you lose to the bad teams. On the same day of Tyler Gilbert's wonderful no-hitter. Don't want to say perfect game, no-hitter. I will preface that this is the Trevor Bauer update of the show. So we want to just, if you want to pass by this episode, pass by this segment, it's perfectly fine. Give yourself about a minute and a half. Just skip ahead. Trevor Bauer is today, 19th, we have an update now, but we'll start with the 14th and we'll work our way through. On the 14th, Washington Post, Gus Garcia Roberts and Molly Hensley Clancy reported that a woman in Ohio filed a report for a temporary order of protection 2020 after repeated threats from Bauer. The connection between this woman and Bauer date back to 2017 when Bauer was a member of not one, but two Ohio-based Major League Baseball teams. So that was both the Indians and the Reds. Remember, he pitched for both earlier in the decade. She reported to police several bruises, several other evidence of injuries from the alleged assault by Bauer. Bauer responded to this article on Twitter. Go read the tweet if you so choose. The report from the Washington Post is full of, I want to say, heavily graphic details that shows the greatness of the Washington Post. But also, you just have to be very careful about how you want to read the details because, like I said, they're graphic. But that article was published at the same time as Bauer was entering a hearing with LA Superior Court for the restraining order from the woman in California. Now, this case, this hearing, generally, from what I understood, is a fairly routine hearing for a restraining order. It's like you talk about it, and then the judge makes a decision. However, this was going to be a lot of airing of facts and expert opinions. I believe a nurse, a doctor, there were several people that were involved in the hearing in Los Angeles. We are recording this at about 4 o'clock. Eastern on Thursday, August 19th. 30 to 40 minutes ago, we got the final judgment from the Honorable Diana Gould Saltman, who was presiding over this hearing. She said that the restraining order from the woman in California was denied and that the ongoing police proceedings from Pasadena, the FBI, and Major League Baseball can proceed as they were going, but the restraining order is not in place at this time. If you wish to consume more information about this, we will put a link to the Washington Post article, an article from USA Today, which also details things. The Los Angeles Times has an article that was all during the hearing sequence. There was also an ESPN Daily episode with Alden Gonzalez, who is based on the West Coast for ESPN and reports on baseball. And he details how the hearing evolved to the start, because it was recorded on, I believe, Sunday night before the hearing began on Monday. Just all these things are very, very tough to listen to. It was even challenging for Kazuki and I to kind of come up with details to explain them without getting into the graphic details, because trying to explain them, graphic details in a podcast are hard enough. Please read up on this, because this case is not going away. Just because what happened today in LA Superior Court said the restraining order is not in place doesn't mean that this woman's story does not go away. There are still multiple ongoing investigations, and I believe now multiple states possibly, of what's going on. So please read up on that. And now we'll get back into the other baseball news. Fernando Tatis Jr. has rejoined the San Diego Padres. He joined back on the night after Tyler Gilbert's no-hitter. And he's playing the outfield, which is an interesting development because we all know this. Tatis Jr. primarily plays at shortstop. We have also noted that the Padres have a plethora of infielders. Cronenworth, Ha-Sung Kim, they got Adam Frazier. They got everyone that can play the infield. The outfield is an interesting dynamic while you can play this because they have Trent Grisham, Will Myers, Tommy Pham, and now Jake Mariznick is out there. So they have just talent for days. But he's going to play in the outfield for now. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully that gives his shoulder a bit of a respite from what it was getting brutalized, diving and throwing constantly at shortstop. Flip back to the negative side. Jacob DeGrom is still on the IL and will continue to be on the IL for more weeks as the inflammation is not reduced in his arm, his throwing elbow, significantly enough to warrant him progressing to the next step of rehabilitation. That was according to Ryan Young of Yahoo Sports. Sticking with the Mets, Mets owner Steve Cohen is on a just blazing trail of tweets recently. He tweeted on Wednesday, So that was yesterday before their day game against the San Francisco Giants. About the 5-game losing streak up until the game they won yesterday with Kevin Pillar's massive home run extra innings. His tweet said as follows. It's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have a more disciplined approach. The slugging and OPS numbers don't lie. And welcome to the world of Twitter outbursts by a billionaire hedge fund manager and now the owner of New York Mets. Great. And then they won a game. So did it work? I don't know. But your team is incomplete, Steve Cohen. You don't have Javi Baez, you don't have Francisco Lindor, and you got a Kevin Pillar home run against his former team, I might add. So welcome to Outburst World, and we'll move on from here. The next story is, again, it just happened, and we're going to report on it. Tigers broadcaster Jack Morris, during the game when the Tigers were playing the Los Angeles Angels, said something and did a caricature that was blatantly just racist and insensitive about, while Shohei Ohtani was at bat, about how you should pitch to Shohei Ohtani. Bally Sports suspended him. It was just a dumb move by Jack Morris. He apologized, not the most eloquent way, let's go with that very clearly, but Bally Sports, according to Detroit Free Press's Kirkland Crawford, suspended him. For how long, we don't know what the consequence of his suspension will be, but he's suspended. As we have talked about before, this happened previously with other broadcasters saying things that were just racially insensitive and need to know better. So we'll see what happens with this one going forward. And now we'll get into a little bit more of the business, and then we'll finish on a good note. I promise there is a silver lining to all of our bad news. Diamondbacks pitcher Cale Smith, we're going back to Arizona, going back to Chase Field. Last night on Wednesday, August 18th, was ejected from the game when he, during a foreign substance inspection, they found black spots in his glove. And his glove was not black. They could see them very clearly, so they ejected him. He said it was dirt. It was a mix, and it could have been. And Lance Lynn was also ejected last night for throwing his belt. But that wasn't because of the foreign substance, because the umpire ejected him for unsportsmanlike conduct. Caleb Smith was not. Caleb Smith was ejected maybe for a little bit unsportsmanlike conduct, but also because of foreign substance. His glove was confiscated, is now in possession of Major League Baseball, being shipped to Secaucus in New York City. We'll see what happens there. Some early developments have now come out about the new collective bargaining agreement proposals. The Athletic's Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal report that MLB proposed a salary floor, which currently does not exist in Major League Baseball, of $100 million, and the star luxury tax to be brought down from $210 to $180 million. And that will hopefully create a more equitable balance as we get going. But that's the first notion I've heard about collective bargaining agreement talk. And then, though he was cracked in the face with a line drive, Chris Bassitt is on the mend, and we are very happy to hear that. For what's from the team, his agent, himself. He has a fractured bone in his cheek, which is frightening to say, but he will have surgery. He is out for probably 6 to 9 weeks recovering, but there was no eye damage. There was no brain damage. The only known damage currently is a fractured cheekbone on his non-pitching hand, I believe, side. So I think it's the left side. He's a right-hand pitcher, correct?
Yeah, he's a right-hand pitcher.
So he got his cracked on the left side of left cheek, and he's collapsed to the ground. Game was stopped. He was attended by the medical team, and he is, I believe, now moving from Chicago, where the game occurred, back to Oakland, where he will have surgery, and we'll move on with that. But we wish him the most healthy recovery, because that is scary. We've seen our friends get hit with, like, on the feet, on legs, with balls, and it's painful enough. Face is another thing, so we hope he recovers there. And with that lengthy news segment, this is a big, hefty news week, we'll get into the cycle, and we'll get into all of our regular segments. The cycle this week is we're going to talk brief about the Field of Dreams game, but the concept of the Field of Dream games and special event games coming thereafter. We want to revisit, or actually introduce, a topic about how we watch and listen to baseball, because Kazuki and I have talked a lot about this as friends, but there's been some news about Major League Baseball, and we'll kind of go into that. We have a lot of disclosures about that, but we'll talk about that a little bit. Reevaluating the AL East, because we have seen some significant movement in the standings for the for that division recently. And then we're going to go in the club a little bit on the Milwaukee Brewers. And I wanted to do that because Kazuki and I are discussing everyone but the pitchers now. And we used to talk about the pitchers. And now we're going to move on from the pitchers. Then we'll do our tip of the cap, our give them the hooks. My tip of the cap this week is to our very beloved Forbes softball team, which plays their final game tonight. Our give them the hooks are all about pitching this week because there has been some really bad pitching performances. Our walk-up songs of the show, we're traveling out to a custom and a tradition born from Madison, Wisconsin this week. Our extra inning segment, we saw the retirement of a team legend in Chris Davis. You can laugh all you want. Chris Davis is a legend in Baltimore for both good and not so good reasons. But he retired, and we have a new day on the calendar to mark. Chris Davis Day will join Bobby Bonilla Day as I celebrate a baseball holiday. And with that, we'll lead into the segment of this. We'll lead into our four stories of the cycle. The first being the Field of Dreams game. Off the top, Kazuki, any initial impressions of the game on August 12th? What'd you think? Besides the game itself. But like the atmosphere, the environment, what'd you think?
The field, it was magical. Like, it was replicating that 1989 movie, right? 89 was Kevin Costner. It was just great. I think it was one of the most watched games in MLB history, like, since, like, 1990. It's been, it drew at least 5 million people viewership on Fox for that
right,
game.
On
so,
a
I mean,
Thursday night game. It was like, it went up against preseason football, I think, too, which is interesting. I mean, preseason football, but it still went up against like other games. The reason why I bring this game up is because ESPN's Ashley Brewer posited an interesting idea. Her idea in concept was have every all-star game at Field of Dreams, which I'm not sure will ever happen. But the idea led me to just investigate other special event baseball. We also know now, according to Bobby Nightingale of the Cincinnati Inquirer, that the Reds and the Cubs are supposedly going to play at Field of Dreams in 2022, which kind of loses the historical aspect of it, but still you get two historic clubs, local, right there. This coming weekend, so August 21st, we'll have the Little League Classic between the Los Angeles Angels versus the Cleveland Indians. They'll play at a modified Williamsport Stadium, which used to be home to a minor league baseball team, but is not so much anymore. I have to check that. The Crosscutters is Williamsport. They used to be the members of the New York Penn League, but I haven't checked recently what league they're in. And I'll offer a slight correction. Last week, I said that the Little League World Series incorporates a world collection of teams. This year, it's a little bit different. It's 16 teams for the 8 regions in the U.S., but they've now ordered that Team A and Team B for every region. So if you're the winning team from your division, you are the number one seed, so you get a certain position, and you get a B seed. So there are 16 U.S.-based teams. So I offer that correction. I apologize for last week. So there are 16 teams, and their families are going to be able to watch that game on premises in Williamsport. All of this being said, what is the future of special event location baseball? Because we have seen this slightly on the rise recently. Here's a list of games that I have come up with that I saw. The Mariners played Athletics in Tokyo during what was Ichiro's final game. This tradition goes back several years. We had Ichiro play several games there. We had the Yankees play a game with Matsui. The Cubs played a game there in Tokyo. The Red Sox played the Yankees a couple years ago in London. The Padres have played the Mets in Monterrey, Mexico. That was in the 90s, which was the first game ever played outside the U.S. or Canada for regular season baseball, according to MLB.com's David Adler. I remember the Dodgers played the Diamondbacks in Sydney, Australia years ago, and there have been several games played in Puerto Rico. So my question to you is, do you think this is a trend that's going to continue based on the TV ratings, everything alike? And then, well, supposed guess, where would you like to see a game?
You know, I think it's going to still continue. I've seen spring training games in the Coliseum where the Red Sox faced the Dodgers. I thought that was a really cool venue. You have a baseball team in a football stadium. Like, that's pretty magical. And, you know, there's been a lot of games in Mexico, and obviously we have Canadian games in Toronto, but hopefully more expansion in Vancouver. That could be other things. But if I were to suggest any like other location, I kind of want to expand into maybe Southeast Asia, like but Bali, like Indonesia, or even India. I think India will be kind of nice because, you know, cricket's very huge and it's similar to baseball. And there's been a lot of crossover event between baseball and cricket before. So I think that'll be a kind of a cool way to promote each other's games and, you know, grow more of a regional popularity of baseball out there. So
I think it would be, since now we've all been interested in the KBO to get a game out in Seoul or any of the Korean baseball stadiums, because they look very interesting on TV. I'd be curious to see them. But I think you're right. I think the trend of special event baseball is going to continue. I'd be interesting if they do neutral site all-star games. I think Ashley Brewer's idea is actually pretty genius. Do neutral site all-star games, like where you find neutral site type games. Because I don't think any sport really does that except the NFL. The NFL plays their Pro Bowl in a neutral site. It used to be in Hawaii, now it's in Orlando. Those are not NFL stadiums. Will that continue? And then generally their championship, the Super Bowl, is at a neutral site. Last year it was not, which was an anomaly to have Tampa Bay play in Tampa Bay. But that concept is interesting. Until, speaking of Tampa Bay, I would actually really be intrigued how many times someone will go back and play Montreal. When that option opens up again, to play games in Montreal, I think would be really interesting. Just because that'd be a great way to add Montreal back in the flavor. Vancouver for Canada. What other football stadiums could you potentially do it in? Will you resurrect stadiums where former stadiums used to be? That kind of thing. So I think that is all on the table. But I think special event baseball is a really interesting concept. And I would love to see them go back to Australia and Japan again. And in terms of Europe, I would be curious to see if they play a game in like Paris or Rome.
I think Italy will be a good Rome. Right. Yeah.
I also have to mention that I believe they played a game at Fort Bragg years ago. They played a game on an army base, which I think would be really cool if they were able to do that again. Since the baseball season doesn't really overlap with Veterans Day, but they have Memorial Day, they have other holidays you can kind of play around with to kind of do a special event to honor a group of people in that sense. I think that'd be really interesting to do. I also, this is a long shot, but I'd be really curious if they could do it. Lacrosse has a very strong connection with Native American heritage and culture in North America. If baseball can find that type of environment here, I think it'd be really interesting, because I can't imagine there's a team for the Iroquois Nation in lacrosse. Playing on Iroquois land must be one of the most humbling experiences I can imagine. So I imagine if baseball is able to find that type of nuance and linkage, that'd be pretty cool, but we'll see. Because as of right now, we had the Little League Classic. We have potentially another national series. And we have the Field of Dreams games. So we'll see. Now we're going to get into not where baseball play, but how do we watch baseball? And before we get to this topic, you've mentioned this before, but I want to very clearly mention up front for somewhat, quote unquote, legal purposes, because I feel like I have to do this. Kazuki works for Disney, which owns ESPN, which is a rights holder of Major League Baseball. Very clear that they also own BAMTech, which is the major league, which is one of the major engines that powers your ability to watch Major League Baseball. I have consulted on projects with several companies that have been either rights holders or have large amounts of data about digital linear viewership. Therefore, we're kind of going to limit our discussion to just the premises. We're not going to kind of go into the data, into the viewership numbers. So in Iowa, same day as this game was occurring on the Field of Dreams game, Xavier Sanchez, which is a reporter based in, I believe, the Chicagoland area, took a picture of a billboard outside Dubuque, Iowa. And the billboard specifically said very carefully, "Commissioner Manfred and the MLB Blackouts let Iowans watch their favorite games." I was not fully aware of this, so I went and did some research, read an article from Jared Dime of the Wall Street Journal. Great writer. Publication we'll talk about later, because their softball team, not so friendly. And Joe Lucia of Alpha Announcing. Iowans have one of the largest blackout areas in all of MLB.tv for any geographic area in North America. They get games blacked out from the Cubs, Brewers, White Sox, Twins, Royals, and Cardinals, which is geographically, if you're trying to put that in perspective, that's like every bordering state. And you can't even get some of those local networks in Iowa, from what I understand. The Field of Dreams game Commissioner Manfred is asked about this, and according to Dargan Southard of the Des Moines Register, this was the quote. It's a little bit of a lengthy quote, but I'll try to read it in detail. "There is nothing more important to us as a business priority than delivering games to fans," Manfred said during the pregame press conference ahead of the Field of Dreams game. "That's what we're about. The blackout situation is a complicated one. It involves our regional distributors, our individual clubs, and the broadcasters. And we are spending a tremendous amount of time in an effort to get to a better place in terms of where our games are distributed. It is a top priority for us right now." That's the baseball side. So I looked at other leagues. In Iowa, according to Joe Lucia of Awful Announcing, NHL, Blackhawks, Blues, and Wild, that's Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, blacked out. NBA, Bulls, Timberwolves, and Pacers. Oddly, not the Bucks. The Pacers is a weird one because Iowa doesn't even border Indiana. Plus, you have to go through in Illinois. And plus, it just didn't sit right with me, but that's what happened. In terms of the networks that these franchises are broadcast on, Sinclair's own Bally Sports is the primary RSN for all these teams, except for Chicago, which is Comcast owned, and then the Marquee Network. Diamond also points out that distance is not a consideration because Iowa is a squarish type state, more of a parallelogram, but you get the orientation distance doesn't really matter because Kazuki and I have spent time in New York, and MLB.tv allows us to watch Phillies games, Red Sox games, Nationals games, Orioles games, Pirates games, and they are in the general same amount of distance between these teams. So it doesn't make a lot of sense based on distance. So we don't really know what the rhyme or reason is other than like distribution agreements. All of this leads us to how you're watching baseball, because right before this all happened, there was a story that was a little presumptuous. Andrew Marchand of New York Post reported that Barstool Sports and Major League Baseball are in talks to have their midweek game, which is currently on YouTube, be broadcast on Barstool after the YouTube agreement ends. According to this article, YouTube and NBC's Universal streaming platform Peacock, which has broadcast a few games, I believe, as part of the Phillies, and a couple other Comcast-owned networks, are also contenders. Now, we're going to leave about the whole Barstool, how you feel about Barstool and the comments about Barstool. We have to reserve ourselves to that one too, because we have recently learned that one of our close friends is at the negotiating table on the Barstool side. So we're going to leave that there. But the concept of Barstool being a competitor to broadcast these games is interesting because, as Kazuki and I have learned also, that Barstool is owned by a sports betting company. Penn National Gaming, which recently bought The Score, which is a news and sports service, which owns Scorebet, which is another sports betting platform based in Montreal, was purchased by Penn National Gaming. And the MLB has routinely said that their priorities are younger audience and sports betting. Like, very openly have said this. So this made a lot of just simple sense to like consider Barstool. However, the heat around Marchand's article is cooled very quickly by an article from the John Wall Street blog, a.k.a. Corey Leff from Sportico, which basically said that these negotiations are non-existent. According to Sportico, John Wall Street has learned the discourse is much to do about nothing. A source familiar with the dialogue between the two parties said Barstool called MLB because they knew these rights are on the block. MLB fielded the call, but it hasn't gone farther than that and likely won't. MLB was surprised to read the Post article because the conversations with Barstool are non-existent. And then it goes on to say that Barstool is believed to have fed the story to the tabloid. The company did not respond for any comment. Regardless of the fact, the question still remains about how we're going to negotiate streaming broadcasts as a tier one broadcast, because these called tier one broadcasts are national level broadcasts. This all brings up another concept of just how people have been watching other leagues. Because Major League Baseball, Kazuki, I think you'll see how you say this, is definitely been the most complicated of all of these by far. I mean, you're an MLB.TV subscriber, and it's sometimes like you've been around different cities. It's like you're in Seattle, you go, you miss out on the Mariners games. You have to watch Mariners on local TV, but there's no other team close by. If you're in California, it's a crapshoot because you're going to potentially get the Angels and the Dodgers knocked off. Maybe the Padres, maybe the Diamondbacks, maybe the Giants, and maybe the Alka-Flex. You don't know. It's like a very hard mix. So we looked at every major sports league and their streaming packages and how this all relates to it. NHL is the most recent one that had a negotiation, so we'll start with there. NHL Now will have an out-of-market television broadcast, so their NHL.TV is migrating to ESPN+, which previously had been done by MLS's out-of-market program, which is still going to be up for right soon, but we'll go there. ESPN Plus will also have exclusive rights for certain broadcasts. So streaming is the primary national broadcast for certain games for NHL this year. MLS, also in ESPN Plus. Soccer in general is very much a streaming-related product in the U.S. and behind a paywall. English Premier League, Serie A, which is Italian, La Liga, Spain. The only one that I think is not is France. The French top-tier soccer league is on beIN Sports, which is a very hard-to-get network for most cable packages, but it's not primarily a streaming option. But most other ones are. The NWSL is too. The NWSL is on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports. It's a mixture of the two. The WNBA is kind of like the best model growing as they grow their audience. They have agreements with everybody. They have agreements with CBS. They have agreements with ESPN. They have agreements with Facebook, Amazon Prime, ESPN for ESPN3. Like they have like a multitude of them and they just can't decide. They can't stop growing in terms of their broadcast, which is easy because you can get a lot of games basically for free. And then the games that are not for free, most people have Amazon Prime subscriptions. So you get that. And Facebook's easy to find. And like, it's very nice. You used to have games on Twitter too. Their counterpart, the NBA, is the only that I know of that does not have a streaming specific package. The NFL, which is the most popular sports league for viewership in America, has exclusive games on their NFL network, sure, but they also have games that are broadcast on Amazon Prime. Now, I should also mention that NFL, the NHL, MLB, the NBA all have their own networks that they own and operate, which broadcast games out of market for anybody around the country, which is also great. And then it comes to radio, SiriusXM and TuneIn have the rights to all the major sports broadcasts. You get them you want. That's a lot of stuff. But the general notion is, if we go back to baseball, it's like, what are they going to do? Because they have a huge problem on their hands. If they're wanting to grow the game and they have by far the most complicated blackout rules, NFL used to, but I think they're mostly gone. I mean, other than the fact you don't know what game you're getting every week, it sounds like. But MLB, if where I live, should be simple. It's like, I live in New York. I don't get Mets games. I don't get Yankees games. Great. Everything else is out of market to me. But if I'm in the Midwest part of the country where you don't have a team, I'm thinking Iowa, I'm thinking Tennessee, I'm thinking Kansas, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, like that mountain Midwest region, it's a guessing game and it shouldn't be a guessing game. So what do you think is going to happen with these blackout rules for MLB? Like, how are they going to figure this out? Like, is there a way to figure this out?
It's tough because the regional sports network, it's going to go against the antitrust law, and which is originally was the Fox networks was supposed to be absorbed by Disney. But that was one of the factor on what, you know, the SEC would have blocked Disney from buying Fox, was they had to sell that in like 3 months after they purchased most of 21st Century Fox. So if they could somehow bypass that whole antitrust law, maybe there's a way for us to have just one streaming package where, like, let's say Amazon Prime has all the MLB games, out of market games, so you could watch on Amazon Prime so you don't have to worry about all these blackout rules. It's just all on Amazon. I think that'll be the cleanest way, but I think a lot of these restrictions, legal rights, and money is going to really be heavily involved in. Everyone knows that live sports is the only way for them to make money, especially in like linear television. So there's going to be a pick of a battle.
That's the point that I always come back to. You made it very clearly. Live sports is a moneymaker for linear television. And there have been a lot of ins and outs of stories about Bally Sports, the new owner of those Fox Sports networks, trying to create a universal national streaming package that you can purchase, which they own a lot of sports rights, but I don't know what's going to happen with them. And then you see teams are creating their own networks. I mean, Chicago Cubs went against the grain and built the Marquee Network. The YES Network, which was owned, operated by the Yankees, was then sold to Sinclair and Amazon as like a syndicate, is another way of doing it. But it still just creates this weird notion of like, who are you blacking out? Like, I never had MLB.TV. I lived in Vermont. Now, I'd be curious to know like what's blacked out in Vermont, because Vermont is a long and skinny state. So I could see like part of the state getting blacked out by Yankees, Mets, and Red Sox games, and one half getting Red Sox games. Like, I don't know what happens in New Hampshire. I don't know what happens in Maine. Like, that kind of thing. Like, they can't go to the cable networks and say, like, what TV broadcast networks do you have in this area? Because you can usurp that and get YES on these, or YES from, like, if you live in Philadelphia, you can get YES. Right. You don't get the YES games. And it's just right. This weird dynamic of it, just really hard to kind of navigate. I don't know what's going to happen. I will say I'm very lucky. And you kind of brought up to me in our conversations over the past couple of weeks, because I listen to most sporting events. I usually watch soccer. That's the one that I generally watch. There's no blackout rules for most of soccer, and I watch mostly international soccer. Granted, if I want to watch the local MLS teams, I get blacked out if I want to watch that. But for other sports, I'm the person who's just, I turn on the radio, I turn my TuneIn subscription, my premium subscription, or my SiriusXM subscription, and I get every single game, every NFL game, any NHL game. I just have to say which networks I want, and I'm on my way. And it's been very interesting to consume games that way, because I don't have to worry about this. But you, as an MLB.TV subscriber, and being in different locations over the last year and a half as being a subscriber to that, like when you're in Florida, you don't know if they're going to get blacked out from the Marlins games.
And if you, we do. We get blacked out from both Rays and Marlins.
Right.
So I couldn't watch the Mariners game when they were playing Tampa Bay. So
right. which makes sense
to physically go there.
Right. If you're in the general Tampa Bay area, that makes sense. You probably could have gotten that. So I get that duplicative network. But let's say you're in Jacksonville. Like, do you get blacked out from Braves games? Like, I don't know.
Possibly.
Right. Because Fox, now is Bally Sports South. It could creep into that zone, like South Carolina, North Carolina. Like, there are so many states that have so many densely populated areas that don't have Major League Baseball teams that it's really hard. I imagine football will never have to deal with this problem ever. Football, it's really simple. Like, if your home team is like, there's like a home team rule, but everyone kind of like knows the rule. There's a great website for him called 506 Sports, run by a guy in Newfoundland, Canada. He basically just pinpoints the maps every week about where you get. So every Wednesday afternoon during football season, it's like the greatest gift ever. It's like, what random game will I get this week if my team is not playing? With baseball, it's worse, because if I am in a certain area and I'm going to another area, I don't know what the blackout rules are. And it's not like you don't get them once, you don't get them ever. And I'm curious to see how this works with hockey this year, because with ESPN getting the rights for the out-of-network package, I know in New York, I will get blacked out from Devils, Islanders, Rangers games. Easy. However, will I get blacked out from Flyers games? I don't know. Like, I'm that far around in New Jersey. Like, I don't really know. Like, I don't know where the line is. So we'll see. But I think everyone, as they move towards streaming and the Major League Baseball, like, streaming is an easier way to attract younger viewers, because most of them have streaming subscription over linear cable subscriptions. This is a huge problem. So we'll see how this goes, and we'll probably have an off-season discussion as the collective bargaining comes. Maybe this come up there, but we'll move on into the real baseball stuff now. The AL East. The AL East is a complete change of events when we saw it a month ago. We'll start with the team that's having the best time ever right now. That's the New York Yankees, and Kazuki was kind of like, probably has a slight grin on his slight sheepish grin, because he knew he wrote them off a little bit, and we all did. But thank you, Joey Gallo. Like, Joey Gallo came in and has absolutely phenomenal for this team. Like, I don't really know much about him in terms of like what he could truly do for a team, because he's been suffering teams most of his career. And then Rizzo was great. COVID-less, Luke Voit stepped in and did beautifully. I now hear Luke Voit is now a little bit perturbed and wants more playing time, but now Rizzo is back, so it's going to happen. Higashioka has been everyday catcher without Sanchez being the option when he was on the COVID IL. But the main issue appears to be in the bullpen. But then they solved the bullpen, sort of. But Zach Britton was very clear about like what happened after the Field of Dreams game. Like, I do not want to be in that position ever again. Like, do not make me go into the game and be that person. But we've had problems with Chapman, Chad Green, and we'll see what happens. But they've been on a rise, 14-4 in August with one run game, including three-game sweep of the Red Sox. They were 10.5 games back of the Red Sox on July 6th and have gone 26-11 since then and are now one game ahead of the Red Sox in the first wildcard spot, trailing, of course, the Tampa Bay Rays. Unsung heroes, pitching, Albert Abreu, Nestor Cortez, Luis Gil, and Wandy Peralta all have been helpful with a depleted bullpen, starting rotation off and on. And then Tyler Wade has stepped in a lot of roles, which has been very important for him. He's banging 275, four RBIs. Four runs matter when you're playing close games. Four runs matter. I think that's what's important. Any initial thoughts before I get into the Red Sox? But that's been a lot of really helpful, good stuff for them.
I mean, I got to say, props to Matt Blake in that pitching department. Like, they really rehabilitated a lot of these pitchers. Like, Nestor Cortez, I mean, he's been barely around. He's been in and out of a bunch of teams. And, like, he's been, like, a 4A guy, like, in a bullpen shuttle this whole time. But he's been, like, their ace, essentially, was out Garrett Cole for 3 weeks. And he's been facing really tough teams, too. And he's been shutting them down.
Amer Andrew Heaney came in as like a fill-in starter a couple times, and he's also been a starter for most of the season. But it may have been great games, but he served a role when they needed to buy time, and he bought time for them. Like, he went fairly deep into games. So that's good. Like, you're buying time. And then batting, like I said, Joey Gallo, those home runs look like, and they just feel different. They look different on screen in Yankee Stadium, which is great for them. So continue all you want.
And Lindsay Adler brought up a great point, the writer of The Athletic, about having the left-right balance. And Yankee lineup, you know, in the beginning of the season was all righty. And now that you brought in that lefty, it makes a huge difference. Like, you know, there's a lot more balance now in the lineup. And even though the Yankees have a very strikeout heavy, three true outcome guys like Gallo and Odor, like, it's still helpful because it's a different view, you know, from the pitchers. And yeah, most of the teams cannot just rely on right-handed bullpen arms anymore to shut them down. They have to, like, figure out if they need to bring in a lefty or not. So I think that really brings in that balance,
making
too.
Making teams work, making your opponents work, which we saw watching the Mariners game, because all the games were very close, but they made the Mariners work for every single at-bat, and that is not how the Mariners want to play. And they got handled a few games, which is important. We'll flip it around. The Red Sox. The Rizzo-less Red Sox. They got back Chris Sale. Yay. That's about it. Kyle Schwarber is still a wait and see. He is not anything close to Anthony Rizzo in terms of the efficiency they needed. They've been relying very heavily on players like Devers, Verdugo, and Martinez for run production. Their pitching seems to be good, and then you get to the bullpen and it just, you're going to get into this later, but there is a definite fall off recently, which is so sad because we were so high on Matt Barnes and that collection of individuals. They have not been that collection of individuals we had hoped for. They now sit one game back of the wild card of the Yankees. The Yankees made up 9 games in 23 days, which is a lot. They were 22 games over 500 on July 5th. They have now 15-21 since that time. Not good. That's not playoff bound baseball. Any initial thoughts on the Red Sox? I know we'll save a few points for later, but my point is they are relying way too much on Devers, Verdugo, and Martinez.
And even Bogarts, they're all burnt out. Like, they're right. Just tired.
Right. And they're great players. I just don't think they've ever had this much pressure on them before. Like they, J.D. Martinez has had it before. He's been a lot better. But Verdugo and Devers and Bogarts from his time with the playoff bound teams years ago, that's a lot of pressure to have on them, unless they're playing good teams.
And it's the pressure on the starting rotation now, too, now that they can't go to the bullpen. It's probably because the bullpen got taxed quite a bit because most of the starters couldn't go deep into games outside of Nathan Eovaldi. So, like, Garrett Richards maybe goes 3 or 4 innings. And they
got blown up by the Tigers. We were talking about that last episode. They got blown up by the Tigers. And we will say this to the end of the season. Do not get blown up by the teams that are not supposed to be blowing you up on your track to the playoffs. The Pirates have disrupted teams. The Diamondbacks have disrupted teams. The Tigers have disrupted teams. And if you're in a close division like the NL West, the AL East, that is not going to work for you. And the Red Sox got blown up by the Tigers, and that has started this just fall off.
I mean, to give Tigers credit, I think they're talented.
Absolutely.
They just didn't have the system or the coaching in place. And like it or not, AJ Hinch is a good manager and his staff has been very good. We don't like him, but he's actually, we got to give him credit. Like he really is making that Tigers club.
They ran into Eric Haas in that when he was on a hot streak too. They ran into some great players.
And Jeremy Candelario is the other one. And then you have decent young pitching arms coming in as well.
Sure. Absolutely. And speaking of young players, we have to go to another member of the AL East that's been doing quite well. That's the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are currently not a playoff spot. The George Springer injury in that game at the end of last weekend with the Mariners, the effects of it are, how long-term we'll see what happens. I think he's been back. He's been playing. So we'll see. But he's been injured so often that like any bump or bruise, we always worry like what's going to happen along the road. And with them, they landed Berrios. So they got that extra pitcher. Can they have a shot now to even climb higher? Like the Red Sox, if they keep falling off, will they continue to fall off? Like, I don't know. That's a very strong statement to make, but we were so high in the Red Sox and like, we don't know. And that's not even the worst of it for the AL East in terms of these three teams. Who is number one?
Tampa Bay Rays
with, I don't think a player that you would call like a superstar out there, but you put Kevin Kiermaier, Brandon Lau, Joey Wendell. I'm going to lose track of all my players here.
Like Randy Rosarena.
Randy Rosarena. And then you add players like Austin Meadows. They had Vidal Brujan. He's now back in the minors. They had Franco. They had all these other players just step up and play great. And you're going to lose them every time. Kevin Cash is a master of finding people's strengths. He's a master of strength finding, like a leader. Like we criticized him heavily for what he did with Blake Snell. But it made sense. And that's the tough part to swallow. It's like, we don't like what he did.
I mean, hindsight 2020, right? Like looking at how Blake Snell's pitching today, like he was used properly. Like he is a 5-inning pitcher, unfortunately. Like,
he's a great pitcher, but he can get really ripped apart after that third time around the order. I will say that the player that I have enjoyed, even though he hasn't contributed in terms of like the biggest stats for the Tampa Bay Rays, that's Brett Phillips. Brett Phillips makes watching baseball fun. And I can imagine having him in that clubhouse is just amazing. After what he did in the World Series last year, what he is doing for that team must be indescribable in terms of just energy and excitement. Like that inside the park home run that he hit, like the watching the video of it, it was like watching someone play baseball in like a playground. Like he looked so excited and it just, that stadium, and you were there, it doesn't get full. It's not gonna get full, but it gets loud and it gets exciting. Like it feels to me like an old school hockey rink with the loud horn and the home run sound. And it plays off that so well. That team is built like an old school hockey team. It's like play a bunch of like random players together. We're going to be really great, have a great manager, and we're just going to win games. And baseball, that worked when you build on analytics a little bit, and they did great. And I think they are setting their sights on being the number one team again, the AL, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, Look at it this way. Nelson Cruz is not an everyday player on the Tampa Bay Rays when he's an everyday player on every team possible. So that kind of speaks to volume.
They also lost Willy Adames. Like, let's not forget, Willy Adames is a good player. We're going to get into him in a second. They trade him away for a decent bullpen guy in J.P. Fireisen. But, like, you lost another good player, and you're still just as good?
Yeah, it's just really good bullpen management, too. Like, letting your starter go a little bit deeper now that Tyler Glasnow's out. So, you have Drew Rasmussen, who has a bullpen arm, starting games, going four innings.
Shane McClanahan.
Oh, yeah, he's one name I wanted to bring up. McClanahan's been going deep. He's, like, your ace now. And then you have other arms that are, like, filling in four or five innings. Pacino. You have Colin McHugh pitching four or five innings. Like,
Colin McHugh, who was pitching four or five innings for the World Series-bound Astros at the time, is now, look what he's doing. So I think, that, like I said, it's just, it feels like guys off the street, but they're not guys off the street. They're reliable players for several years. They're just, you may not have heard of them before. So we'll see what happens there. But the AL East is a, AL East and the NL East, we may get to in our future episode, have seen flips in their progression after the All-Star break. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, we'll see by next month how that's going to look like.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We'll see how it ends this month into next month. But we brought Willy Adames, and Willy Adames is now a member of the Milwaukee Brewers, and a team that has just simply fascinated us for many reasons, mainly because of the pitching. But I did some research about this team, and we had talked about this team several times. I have now been able to see Rowdy Tellez play, and he hits just absolute rockets out. I mean, like, towering shots out of the park, or just absolute, like, zero line rockets out of the park. I saw him hit a couple shots, I believe, in Pittsburgh. And then I looked up, like, other players, and, like, players that had the most at-bats in their team were Luis Urias and Avisel Garcia. Avisel Garcia leads the team in home runs. They have both those players, as of yesterday, Wednesday, August 18th, have all the only two players on the team with 400 plus at-bats. Not Lorenzo Cain, not Christian Yelich. It's those two guys. And that's just remarkable. They added Jackie Bradley Jr. in the offseason, who is arguably one of the best defensive center fielders out there. He's been playing quite well. He's been especially helpful with the injuries to Yelich and Cain. Omar Narvaez was an all-star, which he was not when he was on the Mariners. This team was supposed to be built on the backs of Christian Yelich. Just like the Tampa Bay Rays, they're not. Christian Yelich is an amazing player. When he plays and he lights up that American, I think it's American Family Insurance Park now, formerly Miller Field, or Miller Park, it is just electric. But he has not been the player to watch it. It's been Avisel Garcia. It's been the acquisition of Rowdy Tellez, or the acquisition of Willy Adames. It's been the plays of Jackie Bradley Jr. And we'll get into the pitching in a second.
But yeah, I mean, I also want to bring up their 4A guys, like, you know, who's been coming up back and forth in the minors. Main shout out is that Tyrone Taylor. Like, he's been very clutch
for
that team.
Oh, yeah, several times, too. Like, they have stepped up.
Funny story, he's my Little League teammate.
You got to be kidding me, really?
No, yeah, we're both from Torrance, yeah.
Oh, there you go. From the wonderful town of Torrance, California. It's interesting. Like you said, these players are just moving around. They're shuffling around everything. I give a lot of credit to Avisel Garcia because was he supposed to be the star of the team? No. Christian Yelich got banged up and then was put on the COVID IL. And he was not happy about it. None of us were happy about how the series of events that led to both of his time away from the team. But then you go out and you watch a game. You see Jackie Bradley Jr. just jumping on the top of the wall in that ballpark, trying to get every single play. He's running after every single ball, which I know every player does. But when you see a new guy do it, it means a lot to a team. And then you see Willy Adames step up, Rowdy Tellez step up. And then that's just great stuff. And Omar Narvaez having an all-star year is just icing on the cake for them. However, the Brewers are great from what they've been doing. The best thing about them is the pitching. You have talked about them with me for several years at this point. Every pitcher who pitched in the game on Tuesday night, August 17th, against the rival Cardinals, ended the game with an ERA below 2.5. four pitchers: Burns, Williams, Boxberger, another acquisition, by the way, and Josh Hader. Same night, Sophia Minert, the Bally Sports Wisconsin reporter for the Brewers, pointed out that was the team's 15th shutout of the season. That's a major league leading number for the year. I'll stop there before I get to the next one. Dude, you think that team would have the number one led strikeouts by the end of the year?
No, I mean, we did not expect certain players to like move like forward that quickly, like Freddy Peralta, Corbin Burns to be that much of a number one like starter. Like we did
Brandon
not expect
Woodruff to be that much of a number two starter, number three starter. I mean, and they gave up one of their best bullpen arms for Willy Adames. Yeah, JP Fireisen. And it just keeps cycling. We keep moving along here. The rotation is anchored, like you said, by Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta. All stars. All of them. Would you believe that the team leader in wins is Brent Suter?
No, 12? I mean, 12. Right. That's the strange part because he's a bullpen arm.
One start.
Exactly. Yeah.
They went out and tried to acquire John Axford, who got injured in his first game back with them. That's a bummer. Okay. Let's go back to Williams, Boxberger, and Hader. And all those other fun players. And I remember they had Jeffress years ago, and it was like the same thing. It was just add to the bullpen. Because basically, this reminds me of, I believe, the Yankees of like many years ago, where you basically had to get to the fifth inning, through the fifth inning, and then you go 6, 7, 8, 9. You could have individual pitchers pitch every one of those innings. It's like da-da, 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 da-da. And you have that. You have Suter, Williams, Boxberger, Hader. Dun, 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 dun. Every single time. Like you can run that out. The Padres have tried to do this, I think, with their lineup when they try to acquire everyone. But the Brewers are not only doing this, they're doing this and they're way ahead in that division. I mean, the Reds are catching them. But the Reds aren't kind of going after that. But that's something just absolutely incredible. To compare them and the Rays, I've just like put a bunch of assembly parts together and we'll make the best car possible. And they've done it. Any final thoughts on those before we head to break?
You're right. It's all island of misfit toys. Like Rays are good at that. Brewers, you know, have a very good GM in David Stearns. Like he knows what he's up to as well. So it's just interesting how like, you know, mid to small market teams could build such a great team without having to acquire like a premier star player.
And I will end on this because the last time the Brewers did court their star players, it was CC Sabathia they acquired at a deadline, right? That was
yep.
That was the big one.
08. Yep.
08. They got Moustakas 1 year. They went out. They tried it. It was pretty good. But now it's like, we're good. We'll just get Willy Adames, one of the top players on the AL leading Tampa Bay Rays, for a decent to good, very good bullpen arm. Sure up that side of the infield. But oh yeah, we're going to elevate Devin Williams. We're going to get Brent Boxberger on our team. And didn't they give up Hunter Strickland? Like they gave up all these other... Like they had Hunter Strickland for the part of the year. They've had other pitchers for part of the year. They gave up good players throughout the year, but they kept this nucleus intact. And they didn't go out and get these big names when they could have gotten them.
Oh, they have Eduardo Escobar, though. They did get Eduardo Escobar.
They got Eduardo Escobar from the
Diamondbacks.
He hasn't played much. Which is like, again, like this concept, the Rizzo concept. Like, you go for this player and he doesn't come and play and we'll see what happens. But that.
Oh, and you know who else is carrying that team that I forgot to mention hitting wise? Colton Wong.
Oh, yes.
Who was part of the Cardinals.
Great player on the Cardinals. But he's like part of that group of new players that you just step in and you just keep adding to the excitement and the energy in that team. Because as a veteran player on a team, when you see a bunch of new guys go out and win for you when you can't play, I direct this to Christian Yelich because he is probably just watching. He's like, I wish I could be out there. Sure, you wish you could be out there. But you see Colton Wong, Jackie Bradley Jr., Willy Adames, Rowdy Tellez putting all they have out there for you. And they were not on your team the last time when the last season ended. And that means a lot to these players. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about how Boston is now in a really bad position thanks to their bullpen.
Anderson hits it in the air to right, back at the wall, and the White Sox win it!
Welcome back, everyone. We're going to continue on with our segments. We're going to start with our tip to the cap, and we'll start with Kazuki going north of the border with us.
And my pick for this week is Teoscar Hernandez of the Toronto Blue Jays. Why? I mean, he's an all-star, obviously, but he's been red hot since the all-star break. He just earned the AL Player of the Week this past Monday. And during that time span, he batted 500, so 14 for 28, was 8 runs scored, 2 doubles, 3 home runs, 10 runs batted in, was an 893 slugging percentage across the 7 games, even though the Blue Jays went 3-4. Courtesy of the Seattle Mariners winning the series against them in Seattle at T-Mobile Park. During that time, he's been hitting 360, was a 398 on base, was a 685 slugging since the All-Star break, and leads in AL and RBIs during that time frame in that 31 game span. That is just incredible. He's just been red hot carrying that Toronto lineup, and he's been doing that with George Springer being back temporarily and winning Player of the Week, but now he probably has to be the one carrying it now that Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bichette's been slowing down. So,
like I said, that we always were marveled at that, the collection of individuals on that team. They just seem to do amazing things. And Teoscar Hernandez is an add-on to that team, like George Springer, but of lesser known importance. Thank you for that. And my tip of the cap is to the team that helped bring together Kazuki and I when we first met, and that's of the New York Media Softball League in New York City, the Forbes softball team. The Forbes softball team, for as long as I can remember, has always finished the season 500 or better, and that will not be any different this year. They have clinched a playoff spot after beating Wall Street Journal. Now let's go to that game last week on August 12th. In the middle of a very potent heat wave in New York City, Forbes trailed Wall Street Journal 6-0 after 2 innings. The story of this game warranted our very own former captain of our team to write us a beautiful review of the game, which has not happened a lot recently, but he warranted a very good review. True to form, clawed back, trailed by 2 entering the final frame. And with 2 outs, just like we always do, rallied to win the game and clinch a playoff berth at our home field of Riverside Park on the Upper West Side of New York. The team's regular season contest begins shortly tonight, Thursday, against Chartbeat, which Kazuki knows this. It's the only team I've ever hit home runs against. And the last hit that I ever had for the team before I haven't played since was in 2019, was when I hit a home run in the final game against them. And the center fielder crept up against me because he knew I didn't hit the ball very far. And I blasted it over his head. I don't know where I got the strength. And I could not run faster. Like, I ran as fast as I could to score because I did not know where the ball went. And we'll see how it ends tonight. But right now, the team will be playing for potentially a third spot in the season, which is, we'll put them in the playoffs for sure. But the fourth seed will compete against the first overall seed. The playoffs take place in mid-September. So kudos to our friends on the Forbes softball team. Good luck. Some of them listen to our podcast, and we'll share with them later on. And now we're going to go to the Give Them the Hooks, aka the Wall Street Journals of the Wall Street Journal softball version of the teams that have not been performing, the players not performing so well recently. And as we alluded to earlier, Kazuki, the Red Sox bullpen went from being of such high praise to being a dumpster fire of a group recently. And how bad has it gotten?
Very bad. So since the All-Star break, the Red Sox bullpen collectively has amassed an ERA of 5.73, which is 26th in MLB, and they had the FIP of 4.48, which is fielding independent pitching. statistic. And then over this past week, the span of past week, the bullpen is ranked dead last with 12.39 ERA. And Matt Barnes, Adam Ottavino, and Garrett Whitlock, who were the mainstay and anchor of the whole Red Sox this entire season, gave up at least two earned runs or blew games against their division rivals, the Tampa Bay Rays and the Toronto Blue Jays. And during this time, Matt Barnes, who was named an All-Star for the Red Sox, who he had a 2.61 ERA, was 19 saves before the All-Star break. And since then, he has a 7.88 ERA in 10 games and blown three saves already.
7.88?
Yep. And then it gets uglier here. So since August 5th, the Red Sox relievers have 8.31 ERA. So they gave 36 runs in 39 innings. And before that, August 5th, in 109 games, the bullpen had an ERA of 3.57, with opposing hitters hitting 239, was a 708 OPS, so on base and slugging. But since August 5th, hitters are hitting 317, was a 929 OPS against the Red Sox bullpen. This is very bad. And then, and to make matters worse, their trade deadline acquisition, Hansel Robles, has underperformed, allowing 8 runs on 5 hits, 4 walks, and 6 Ks. That's not what you want from your headliner trade deadline acquisition. So
right, that was who they got instead of spraying for Craig Kimbrel, and that's not good. Especially like you said, they have put so much onus on the front of their team to get them to this point, and now you're just taxing everybody, and you can't put that much pressure. But you can't put that much onus on Whitlock, Ottavino, Barnes, and Robles. And you got the other players, which is collectively have not been good. For audience that may have heard my audible shock at the 8.31 ERA and the 7.88 for individually for Matt Barnes, that's astounding for what they were previous to the All-Star break, particularly. Wow, that's a real bad turnaround. Like, that explains why they've gone sub 500 and up for quite some time now. And their schedule doesn't get any easier. I mean, they just got swept by the Yankees, and now they're off to another bike challenging contest because we talked about the schedule matters. The AL East, if you're playing them over and over again, good luck. I mean, that is not an easy bit. I will go to a suffering pitcher myself. That's Jake Arrieta. Jake Arrieta was recently released by the Chicago Cubs, but prior to his release, he had not won a game with the Chicago Cubs since Memorial Day.
Oh, wow.
May 25th, he was released after his start on August 11th. In his last two starts, August 6th versus Colorado, August 7th versus Milwaukee, he only pitched 4 innings in each contest. In the game versus Colorado, he only threw 59 pitches, 3 home runs. We'll visit Colorado again very shortly, by the way. In the game versus Milwaukee, he threw 83 pitches, but allowed 8 earned runs. This was a World Series champion. 2021 with the Cubs, 5-11 record with a 6.88 ERA. That's not a very Cubs-like performance, especially when you have a pitcher like Kyle Hendricks, who's pitching pretty well, despite a not-so-great season for them. His WAR for 2021 after he left the Cubs was -2.1. I know WAR is not an end-all, be-all statistic, but that number just looked bad. He was poised to make a renaissance with the San Diego Padres being signed by them, according to CBS Sports' Matt Snyder, because the Padres have a depleted rotation. They lost Darvish. We talked about the Padres' rotation going up and down all season. Well, to make matters all worse, he revisited Colorado. After 3 1/3 innings, he left with a hamstring injury, which is not good. Like, we're not going to downplay, that's not good. But before his exit, he allowed 5 runs in 3 1/3. In Chicago, like, I was watching a highlight of Chicago last night. All the players are doing great. I recognized one name, which was Matt Duffy, and then Ian Happ. And then every other person was like, who are these people?
Yeah, and like Ortega, and then there's like
Hermosillo.
Frank Schwolitz. I'm sorry, I'm butchering your name, but he's from the A's, who came from the A's. I don't know who
for
it
the
is.
That was in the Chafin trade.
Yep.
And so we see the Orioles just go for tanking broke, it seems like. I don't think the Cubs are going that far, but the Cubs just look like a whole different team. And it's just so shocking. We knew it was going to happen, but it just looks so different. And I don't know what to say other than that. Like, they just look so different where they were. With that, we'll end the bad stuff. I think it's time to sunset that. We'll go to a walk-up song of the show. And I've been looking for around other sports for walk-up songs or related type songs. And as I realized, the walk-up song of the show is our fourth segment of the show. We go with the cycle, then we go to the tip of the cap, give them the hook, and this is our fourth segment. And traditionally, this would be our ending segment. But we always have extra innings and maybe a walk-up song, maybe a walk-off. So what always happens in the fourth or the final quarter of a game? I know when I was in college, there was always a song that was played before the third period in a Cornell University hockey game. But as today is August 19th, it is a day that, well, I'll save why we're celebrating that in a second. I went to the town of Madison, Wisconsin. In particular, I visited Camp Randall Stadium in my mind. And at the beginning of the fourth, between the third and fourth quarter at University of Wisconsin football games, from 1992, revisit the song Jump Around by House of Pain, which if you have watched a game at University of Wisconsin, and I'll visit a baseball-related reference in a second, and watch the game, you will notice that they may not cut away at the end of the third or the fourth quarter at certain times, because this song is played and it gets a rousing, rousing crowd uproar. House of Pain was formed in 1992 in Los Angeles by Everlast, DJ Lethal, and Danny Boy, three prolific artists. The group was signed to Tie Hi Records in 1992, released their debut album, House of Pain. The album went multi-platinum. On that album is the song Jump Around, which was produced by DJ Muggs of the band Cypress Hill. I've listened to the song several times while preparing for this segment this week. I get a lot of Cypress Hill in this song. And what's very important about this song is that includes some noticeable samples. We all know the song The Harlem Shake from several years ago that went viral before it was really viral. There's a song in 1963 by Bob and Earl called The Harlem Shuffle. That song is sampled in this song. Other moments include a sample from Chubby Checker's Poppy the Hitchhiker, released in 1962. According to whosampled.com, both those songs are sampled in this, particularly in the intro. Now, there is a noticeable horn sound throughout this song. Nobody has laid claim to the sample for this. And it's been checked years and years and years. Even DJ Muggs has lent it, saying like it was ours, but then people say no, it's not. And it's a very contentious, like this, the very noticeable horn sound. Chart performance. I want to talk about chart performance. 1992-93 reached number 3 in the US Billboard Hot 100, number 32 in UK singles chart. But the history of this song, in terms of fan culture, really creating a rise out of fans, goes back a while. So October 10th of 1998, University of Wisconsin homecoming game in football versus Purdue University Boilermakers. Someone got a hold of the stadium music playlist. And the song was played between the third and fourth quarter to help get the team going after a really bad third quarter, especially its homecoming. And the tradition has not died since. Even when the stadium was under construction in 2003, students petitioned to keep this tradition alive, even though administrators were fearful that it would affect the stadium construction. Engineers were brought in and said, you're fine. The vibrations will be just okay. Just don't get too high and too crazy. So the tradition has lived on. Even when it seemed like the world was at a very striking and tough situation last year in 2020, a radio station out of Green Bay, WIXX FM, led the charge along with a group on Facebook to play the song at a specific time of day several times throughout the spring, even when it's not football season, to get Wisconsin united around something. That song is like Wisconsin gold. Like it became a uniting factor across the state. And what happened is I realized I was listening to a Detroit Tigers broadcast. Someone hit a home run. It's the Detroit Tigers home run song in 2021. That's the song they play. They play the first couple bars of the song. And it just, it, imagine it, even a big stadium like that, it plays the same loud sound. And likely, as I said, this song has a special place in my heart. One of my, our close friends, one of my dearest friends, went to University of Wisconsin. Today is his birthday. So happy birthday, Amo. This is for you. And that's how we're going to remember House Bang. Like, that's how I remember it. Like, I met two of them. I met first one in Wisconsin. He watched a football game with me. And I was like, what is this concept? And it is just awesome to watch it. It reminds me so much of a great walk-up song. And with that, we'll head into our final segment, extra inning segment. And as we noted earlier, Chris Davis, first baseman of your Baltimore Orioles, has said it's time to call it a career. August 12th, he retired. He retired with 1 year left on the massive seven-year, $161 million contract. They renegotiated that contract, and we have now established Chris Davis Day will exist for many, 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 I believe 15, 16 years to come. And what basically happens is the payment terms will be deferred for several years, and then he'll get a payment every year on a certain day. And according to, I always butcher this, and Katie Nolan has always will ask her producers the same thing when she cites Spot Track, I don't know, it's the website that gives you all the contract negotiations for baseball. He'll be paid through 2037. I think Bob Mooney is 2035. Yeah, so it's a while. He began his career, let's talk about Davis's wonderful career. Because other than the fact that he was had a tough couple of years, he was really good. He began his career with the Texas Rangers before being moved to Oakland. Career 233 batting average with 295 home runs, 780 RBIs. But also 1,852 strikeouts, according to Baseball Reference. In 2013, he led the league with 53 home runs and 138 RBIs. In 2015, he had 47 home runs, but also 208 strikeouts, following up in 2016 with 219 strikeouts. So he was definitely a three outcomes kind of hitter, maybe even a two outcomes kind of hitter. But when he cracked a home run, it felt like a train sound. Like, it was loud. It was big. So congratulations on a wonderful career, Chris Davis. It's such a sad ending with his hip injury. But thank you for delivering some of the most mammoth home runs of all time and igniting a great series of seasons in both Texas and Baltimore. And just like Chris Davis has ended his career, we're going to end the show here. Thank you all for listening. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe where you find your podcast. And we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
That's it for this episode of Sayonara Baseball. This episode of Sayonara Baseball is hosted and produced by me, Kazuki Akiba, and Brandon Beiser. This episode was edited by Kazuki Akiba with additional research by Brandon Beiser. Our theme song is by K. Margus. Sayonara Baseball is a production of Daylight and Media 3 Limited. We'll be back with another episode. If you like this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast as more people will know about this show. Go to daylightinteractive.com to see some exclusive updates and more about our upcoming shows. I'm Kazuki Akiba.
And I'm Brandon Beiser.
And this has been Sayonara Baseball.